Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Questions by the Sages, Text Number 11.
Purini Buri Karamani.
Purini Buri Karamani.
Shrotavyani Vibhagasaha.
Shrotavyani Vibhagasaha.
Atasadhotra Yatsaram.
Atasadhotra Yatsaram.
Samudritya Manishaya.
Samudritya Manishaya.
Bruhi Burini.
Burini.
Multifarious.
Multifarious.
Buri.
Buri.
Many.
Many.
Karmani.
Karmani.
Duties.
Duties.
Srotavyani.
Srotavyani.
To be learned.
To be learned.
Vibhagasaha.
Vibhagasaha.
By divisions of subject matter.
By divisions of subject matter.
Ataha.
Ataha.
Therefore.
Therefore.
Sadho.
Sadho.
O sage.
O sage.
Atra.
Atra.
Herein.
Herein.
Yat.
Yat.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Saram.
Saram.
Essence.
Essence.
Samudritya.
Samudritya.
By selection.
By selection.
Manishaya.
Manishaya.
Best to your knowledge.
Best to your knowledge.
Bruhi.
Bruhi.
Please tell us.
Please tell us.
Badraya.
Badraya.
For the good of.
For the good of.
Bhutanam.
Bhutanam.
The living beings.
The living beings.
Jena.
Jena.
By which.
By which.
Atma.
Atma.
The self.
The self.
Suprasiddhati.
Suprasiddhati.
Becomes fully satisfied.
Becomes fully satisfied.
Turn my phone off.
There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them, there are many prescribed duties, which can be learned only after many years of study in their various divisions. Therefore, O sage, please select the essence of all these scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, that by such instruction their hearts may be fully satisfied.
Purport.
Atma, or self, is distinguished from matter and material elements. It is spiritual in constitution, and thus it is never satisfied by any amount of material planning. All scriptures and spiritual instructions are meant for the satisfaction of this self, or Atma. There are many varieties of approaches which are recommended for different types of living beings, in different times and at different places. Consequently, the numbers of revealed scriptures are innumerable. And that's why it's so confusing. There are different methods and prescribed duties recommended in these various scriptures. Taking into consideration the fallen condition of the people in general in this age of Kali, the sages of Naimisharanya suggested that Sri Suta Goswami relate the essence of all such scriptures, because in this age it is not possible for the fallen souls to understand and undergo all the lessons of all these various scriptures in a varna and ashram system. The varna and ashram society was considered to be the best institution for lifting the human being to the spiritual platform. But due to Kali Yuga, it is not possible to execute the rules and regulations of these institutions. Nor is it possible for the people in general to completely sever relations with their families as the Varnashram institution prescribes. The whole atmosphere is surcharged with opposition. And considering this, one can see that spiritual emancipation for the common man in this age is very difficult. The reason the sages presented this matter to Sri Sita Goswami is explained in the following verses. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupakada Mahayam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yakripata Mahambande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. So, Prabhupada says here, Atma, or self, is distinguished from matter and material elements. It is spiritual in constitution, and thus it is never satisfied by any amount of material planning. This is the first principle of spiritual life, the ABCs of spiritual instruction. Beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna instructs Arjuna, you're not this body, you're a spirit soul. So this is the first piece of information that we should understand, and of course that we should give others, help people to understand, first of all, that we're not a product of material energy. That we're spiritual and we have all of the qualities and qualifications that come about as a result of being non-material. There's a distinct difference between spiritual and material. And as Prabhupada points out here, the spirit soul, the spiritual living being, the jivatma, can never be satisfied by any amount of material adjustment. Never. Because, well, the material world has defects built in. Jamma mritya jara vyadi dukkha dosha anudashanam. One who has transcendental vision, spiritual vision, sees the faults of material existence and understands there's no point in trying to create a solution to problems. The only solution is to leave the material world. That's the solution. The solution to material problems is to say, see you later. To leave the material world. That's the solution to material problems. Because even if we have a perfect situation, and you know, and who has a perfect situation in the material world? Nobody has a perfect situation. It's not possible. But even if you've got a perfect situation, it becomes imperfect because of the everything in the material world has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Nasato vijite bhavo na bhavo vijite sataha. Of that which is impermanent, there is no duration. And of that which is of that which is temporary, there is no duration. Of that which is permanent, there is no cessation. So we're looking for permanent happiness, but you can't find it in a temporary, impermanent place. So this is the very basis of spiritual understanding, and the first point that's mentioned, Atma or self, is distinguished from matter. It is spiritual in constitution, and thus it is never satisfied. And what is the quality of spirit? Basically, Sat, Chit, Ananda. So when we've uncovered our spiritual identity, then automatically we'll be happy and blissful. That's why a devotee is able to tolerate the comings and goings of the material world. You know, the instruction, after Krishna gives the instruction that you're not the body, that you're spiritual by nature, he says, one has to tolerate the comings and goings, happiness and distress, hot and cold, pleasure and pain, fame and infamy. These are all to a devotee, or somebody who has spiritual understanding, these are all just temporary phases of material existence. Not to be too concerned about. When one is deeply absorbed, susukam katam avyayam. When one's engaged in devotional service, then one becomes happy. Because one's situated on the... One's consciousness is situated in one's original spiritual identity, which is naturally to be happy. Even in difficulties, a devotee is naturally tolerant because he experiences satisfaction. And of course, this is what the sages are saying. Please give us the sara, the essence. Right? We have bhakti sara. The essence of bhakti. The servant of the essence of bhakti. Rasasa, the essence of rasa or relationship. So sara means essence. And the sages are requesting Sudha Goswami, please give us the essence of the Vedas, of spiritual instruction, so that we can uncover our, you know, so we can help, because this is one of the themes of this chapter, is that the sages or saintly persons are deeply concerned about the welfare of others. They're not just concerned about their own liberation, but they're concerned about benefiting everybody. You know, if you've got something that's satisfying, enlivening, enriching, which makes you happy, then natural tendency is to want to then share it with others. Right? Share happiness. This is the nature of a cook, a good cook. Right? Wants to share their recipes with others. Usually, actually, they hoard their recipes and they give them to themselves. They share the recipes by cooking and then distributing the prasad. Right? They keep the recipe to themselves. But the nature of a devotee is such that they're not just concerned about their own spiritual advancement. Of course, they are concerned about their own spiritual advancement, but they're also concerned about the advancement of others. And so the sages, understanding the quality of the residents of Kali Yuga, in the previous verse, famous verse, Prayanal Payasha Sabya, what is it? Kalova Smin Yuge Janaha, Manda Sumanda Matayo, Manda Bhagyahi Upadrutaha. The sages and Namasharanya could see the pending Kali Yuga. And they knew that Kali Yuga was a morass of ignorance, of confusion. They also understood the intricacies and the complications, if you like, of the Vedas, of the Vedic literature, and the plethora of instructions that come within that system. And seeing the quality of the people of Kali Yuga and seeing the intricacies and the complications and the subtleties, if you like, the nuances of instruction that's given in the Vedas, they could see that there wasn't going to be a connection between the two. And so therefore they're requesting Siddha Goswami, please give us the essence of instruction. The essence of instruction which will satisfy everybody. Yenatma Suprasiddhati. This is the beginning of the questions of the sages. This effectively is the first question. Or certainly it's the first answer. It's the first question that's answered by Siddha Goswami in the beginning of this next chapter. What does he say? He says, Savai pum sam paro dhammo what comes next? Yato bhaktir hoksaje ahoitiki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. So he says that he repeats yayatma suprasidati. Here's what gives satisfaction. Here's the essence. That is, the essence is to perform activities. That topmost dharma or that topmost activity which will bring about satisfaction of the senses is devotional service which is unmotivated and uninterrupted. But this is his answer, more or less. And of course, what scripture propounds this paradharma or this supreme occupation? That's the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam propounds this highest duty. So the sages at Namasharanya, they could understand. And you know, this is part of the description of how the Bhagavatam was actually written, is that Vyasadeva was dissatisfied. After having compiled all of the Vedic literature, still he was dissatisfied. And Narada Muni more or less chastised Vyasadeva and said, you know, the reason why you're not satisfied is because you've compiled all of the Vedic literature. You've prepared all of this information. But actually in the coming Kali Yuga, this is not going to be sufficient. There's so much instruction in the Vedas. And Prabhupada, it's interesting. Prabhupada more or less distills or compacts all of this information into the following of the Varnashram system. That all of this instruction, variegated instructions that come in the Vedic literature, ultimately conclude in a Varnashram process. It's a process as much as it is a system. Or shall we say, systems are meant to facilitate processes. Processes provide us with what? Outcomes. Isn't it? Isn't that what happens? You do something, you follow a system, you follow a process, and then what happens? You end up with an outcome. But the sages at Namasharanya knew that the qualities of people in Kali Yuga, it's so muddied, it's so murky, it's so such a dirty age where people are so unqualified, short-lived. You know, if you look at the Varnashram system is designed in such a way so as to gradually elevate people out of the mode of ignorance, into the mode of passion, gradually from the mode of passion to the mode of goodness. But we don't live long enough to be able to be gradually elevated from Sudra to Vaishya to Kshatriya to Brahmana. That takes lifetimes of following this system in practice. I mean, it is possible if we could stick to the process. And it's very interesting. Here's, you know, one of Prabhupada's statements, and he makes this statement in a few places where he says, Sudha Goswami, the sages of Namasharanya suggested that Sri Sudha Goswami relate the essence of all such scriptures because in this age it is not possible for the fallen souls to understand and undergo all the lessons of all these various scriptures in a Varna and Ashram system. And then he says again, due to Kali Yuga, it is not possible to execute the rules and regulations of these institutions, the Varna and Ashram society. Right? Not possible in this day and age. Now, here's a question for you. How many here are aware of what their Varna is? Please raise your hands. We have one hand up, then it went down again. One.
Sudra.
Sudra. Well, you're honest. You're honest. No, but that's why nobody puts their hand up. We don't want to admit I'm a Sudra or less. Or at least I figure I'm just mixed up. If I look at my character, I think, well, there's certainly a swathe of Sudra. But then, you know, if you look at my occupation, then there's a little bit of an administrator, something of a Brahmana, you know, at least I can wash myself, keep myself clean, wear clean clothes. And I like to study the Shastra, so there's, you know, there's some elements of, you know, if you analyse your character, you can find elements of all sorts of. And of course, this is a qualification in Kali Yuga, everything's mixed up. Very, very difficult to find a pure Brahmana or a pure Kshatriya or a pure Vaishya or a pure Sudra. Well, maybe not so difficult to find pure Sudras or less. Sudra or worse. Right? Because the Varnashram system. Adrian, I think somebody wants you. Oh, Bhakti Sir. The Varnashram system is designed in such a way so that people can be gradually elevated, but they need to follow the rules and regulations. It's not even understood in this day and age that there is such a system as Varnashram in society, general society, right? In the society that we live in. Maybe in India there's an understanding of these things. But then it's casteism as opposed to an understanding of what the actual system is by qualification. Right? So somebody, you know, Prabhupada gives the example of how you can find a rickshaw walla in Calcutta, and you know, in those days rickshaws weren't bicycles. Right? You still see them in Calcutta. The rickshaw wallas who actually pull the cart like a horse. Right? Prabhupada says it's possible to find a rickshaw walla wearing a Brahmin thread, thinking that he's a Brahmin. But actually he's behaving like a horse. Right? Have you seen it? Seen those guys? Used to in the 80s you used to be able to see people pulling rickshaws. Nowadays I think they've been all modernised and now it's bicycles. So there's no understanding of Varna and Ashram, what to speak of implementation. So therefore the sages at Namasharanya were really concerned about the well-being of people in the future. And so therefore they're inquiring from Sri Goswami, please give us the essence not only that the Prabhupada mentions here the Varnashram system, but also within this if we look at the response that Sudha Goswami gives, he gives the topmost instruction, or he gives the scripture which gives the topmost instruction, Paradharma, the topmost. And what is the topmost? The topmost is basically pure devotional service, Ahoitiki Apratihata. The Vedas are mixed up with there's Karma Kanda, there's Jnana Kanda, there's Upasana Kanda, there's so many different sections of the Vedas. Some of it is pursuit of material perfections, elevation of the heavenly planets. Basically, there are instructions within the Vedas which are beneficial in that they instruct people to gradually follow the Vedic injunctions, to live a regulated life, but their pursuit is of material happiness. Right? So, you know, you get contradictory information in the Vedas. It appears to be, it's contradictory, because as is pointed out here, material pursuits don't make you happy in the long run. They don't make us happy. They might give us some temporary happiness. But in the Vedas, we've got, you know, an institution which gradually elevates us, and in the process of that, the pursuit of material activities is being encouraged, and so people get confused. You know, what are we supposed to do? Here it says we're supposed to worship the demigods. Here it says we're supposed to worship this personality or that personality. So the sages were requesting Sudha Goswami, for the benefit of everybody, please give us a clear analysis of the essence. Please give us that which is essential. That's the most important thing. What is the most important thing? You know, the Varnashram system is gradually meant to elevate us to a point of renunciation. Right? If we're to follow the Varnashram system, this is just an example. If we're to follow the Varnashram system, we are meant to come to a point of sannyas. Right? There's a description of the different stages of sannyas. What is it? There's Kutichak, Bahudak, Parivrajak Acharya, and then Paramahamsa. Right? This is the ultimate goal of the Varnashram system. If we're to engage in our occupation and gradually purify ourselves, then we should come eventually to the point of sannyas. Is that right? That's the Varnashram system. And Prabhupada points out here. Nor is it possible for the people in general to completely sever relations with their families, as the Varnashram institution prescribes. Right? Kuti chak. You know what kuti chak means? That the husband, the aspiring sannyasi, lives away from home in his kutia. And in that kutia he chants and studies and develops renunciation. Family can bring prasad occasionally. Huh? Next stage is Madhukari, right, where he becomes more advanced and renounced and no longer depends on the family members for sustenance, but he goes from door to door. Madhukari. Madhukari, like the Madhu is the bee. Like the Madhukari means do like the bee, right? Go from flower to flower and just take a little bit of nectar from each one. So that's what the sannyasis are supposed to do. So this is for the Prabhus to consider. This is your this is the future in the Varnashram system anyway. To the point where one realizes, actually, I'm not dependent on anybody. Ultimately, I'm dependent on the Supreme, because all the while the time is spent chanting and studying the Shastra. Right? This is the occupation, if you like, of the sannyasi. To the point where he becomes completely detached from the material and understands, I'm totally dependent upon Krishna. He's my provider. When he realizes that, then he becomes a Parivrajakacharya, a preacher, traveling all around, independent and dependent, if you like, on Krishna. And then, you know, the topmost stage is the Paramahamsa. So how many of us are planning to become sannyasis like that? Where's the system even to support? You know, if you went around Albert Park begging from door to door, maybe if there's more devotees that live here, we can go to the Qatar family's place. I should think about it. Whip down on Tuesday night, we can go to Vasudha Priya and Nityananda Priya's for prasad at the Brahmachari program. Was that Wednesday nights? Wednesday, okay, Wednesday night we can go there. When there's more devotees that live around, then we can. But you know, when you think about it, it's unlike, even Prabhupada doesn't recommend sannyas. Because you know, what is the purpose of studying all of the Vedas? Vedas cha savayaham eva vidyo vedanta krit veda vid eva chaham. Krishna says, the whole purpose of studying the Vedas is to know me. The whole purpose of following all the rules and regulations of the Varnashram system is ultimately to come to Krishna consciousness. Just to implement the Varnashram system is not necessarily the perfection of organizing society. If all it is a material construct, its ultimate purpose is spiritual by nature. And if in this day and age the process is just so difficult that one doesn't get to the goal, then what's the point? That's why the sages at Namasharanya wanted the essence. And To study the Vedas is very, very difficult, to compile all of the essential information. Actually, the essential information has been provided for us. It has been. Who is the prominent personality who's compiled all of this information for us? Anybody got any, like to make a guess? Huh? Prabhupada, yes. Yes, certainly Prabhupada. Who else? Vedavyas compiled the Vedic literature, but the sages are complaining it's too difficult. The personality who I'm thinking of ultimately is Lord Chaitanya, but who effectively put it into written form and in a practical form for us to digest and understand, this direct linking process, was Rupa Goswami. That's why we're called Rupanugas. And why the work of the Goswamis is so important, because the Goswamis wrote the Sandarbhas. The Sandarbhas give us a compilation of all of the essential instructions about pure devotional service. Rupa Goswami gave us the Nectar of Devotion. The Nectar of Devotion is about how to perform pure devotional service. He was instructed by Lord Chaitanya. Dasasvamedagat, over 10 days, or how many days it was. Here's the process of devotional service. Now, expand that and give it, provide it in literature for the benefit of everybody. And the same with the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada chose to translate the Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? Because the Bhagavatam only concentrates on Krishna and on devotional service to Krishna, because it shows the characteristics and the qualities of so many devotees. What to speak of the residents of Vrindavan. So it illustrates, it demonstrates, as Banaswami was saying the other day, Purana means Punayate, to make complete. Right? And the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to be it's the essence of all Vedic literature, right at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Nigamakalpataragalitamphalam. It is considered to be the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. The Vedas are like a manual. You know, when you get a computer, you get, along with a computer, you get a manual. Well, you used to get a manual. These days you get a PDF file. But inside that file, there's instructions on how to do everything. So similarly also, the universe comes along with a set of instructions. That's the Vedas. And you know, as Prabhupada explains, there's material and spiritual instruction in the Vedas. Dhanurveda, Jyotish, Ayurveda, which is purely just material information basically. How to defeat your enemies. How to maintain your health. Right? But there's also philosophical information. The Vedanta Sutras. The Upanishads. But for the Kali Yuga, Vyasadeva wrote the Mahabharata and he wrote the Puranas. To make it easy to understand, especially for the people of Kali Yuga. So the Bhagavatam is considered, just like the cream is considered to be the essence of milk. The sa, the rasa sa, or the bhakti sa. So he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually after he'd compiled all of the Vedic literature. He compiled also the Puranas, but still he wasn't satisfied. Then Narada Muni instructed him, you need to focus on Krishna. You need to focus on pure devotional service. And so he rewrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. Recompiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. And because the Bhagavatam focuses on pure devotional service, ahoitiki apratihata, then this literature is not the sole literature, but it is the pinnacle, if you like, the essence of Vedic instruction. Because if one studies the Srimad Bhagavatam, then one will yenatma supersiddhiti, one will become, by which, yena means by which, atma, the self, supersiddhiti becomes fully satisfied. You know, one of the things that I discovered recently was when I would feel very, when I'd have a panic attack and I feel very uncomfortable and really disturbed, the thing that I discovered was if I pick up the Bhagavatam and just sit down and start reading, then the tension would just go away. Actually, I was resting, but also my mind would be disturbed. And I discovered that by reading the Bhagavatam, everything would just become very peaceful. So if you're feeling disturbed, by the standards of the sages of Namasharanya, certainly by the standard of the Satya Yuga, we're always disturbed, right? We've just gotten used to it. We think, oh, this is normal. Right? But actually, according to the sages, because we're always disturbed by, material motivations. And the disturbance, just the things that are going on. We're worried about our jobs. Right? Who's not worrying about their work? You're a Paramahamsa. Except for the Paramahamsas amongst us. Who's not worrying about their relationships? You're not. Okay, you're lucky. And there will be some rare souls. Who's not worrying about their children? Because this is rasa. We get pleasure out of worrying about these. This is our juice, actually. Huh? We get pleasure out of all of these relationships. That's what Krishna gets pleasure out of, all the relationships that he has also. But in Kali Yuga, we're stricken with anxiety, basically. And the sages of Namasharanya could see that, so therefore they wanted Sudha Goswami to give, please give, and so therefore he's presenting the Srimad Bhagavatam. Having heard it, and the reason why he's been selected. They were concerned about the welfare of everybody, and they recognized that Sudha Goswami was qualified. That he was a qualified disciple of his gurus, who had satisfied them, who had then been endowed with spiritual knowledge, transcendental knowledge, and perhaps most importantly, he'd heard the Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami. And so he was qualified to present the essence of Vedic instruction because he'd heard it from his spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami. Whether Sudha Goswami was actually his initiated disciple or not, he was still a Siksha disciple because he'd heard the Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami And he'd realized it. So therefore he was qualified to give the essence. And of course that's why Srila Prabhupada translated the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it epitomizes pure devotional service, ahoitiki, unmotivated, apratihata, undeviated devotional service. Because that's what will satisfy the self. Devotional activities mixed with material activities will just create a disturbance. That's what Rupa Goswami says. What does Rupa Goswami says? What's that verse? Sruti Smriti Puranadi Pantarat Rika Vidhim Vina Oikantika Harer Bhakte Utpat Yaiva Kalpate. Utpat means disturbance. Devotional service that is performed without consideration of the vidhi, the rules, the guidelines that are given in the Shruti, in the Smriti, in the Puranas, in the Pancharatra, in other words, in the Vedas, is simply a disturbance within society. You know, spiritual life is not meant to be performed to provide us with material prosperity. Material prosperity may come about as a result, but that's not the purpose. The purpose is to develop our loving, our lost loving relationship with Krishna. That's the purpose of our devotional activities. And so therefore, the focus in the Bhagavatam and the focus of the literatures of the Acharyas, especially Rupa Goswami, who's our, we're Rupanugas, we are followers of Rupa Goswami. And you know, the Goswamis have basically condensed again the instructions of the Bhagavatam and the other Vedic instructions. So we are given by the Goswamis, especially Rupa Goswami, this Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatrika Vidhi. They've taken the essence, as Sudha Goswami has taken the essence of the instructions of the Vedas, again it's been distilled down even further, because you can study the Bhagavatam and actually get very confused. As Banaswami was pointing out in the 11th and 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, it appears that Sukadeva Goswami is encouraging Maharaj Parikshit to become a jnani. Right? So even in the Bhagavatam, one needs a guide. This is why the spiritual master is so important. In order to study the Vedas and to be able to apply them, you actually need a teacher. The sages at Namasharanya are approaching Sudha Goswami. Sudha Goswami heard from Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami heard from Vyasadeva. So you know, this is the parampara system. We need a teacher to. And in this day and age, it's all been distilled down for us into the process. And of course, Prabhupada has given us the essence. He's given us the essence of the Mahabharata. Given us the Bhagavad Gita. Given us the essence of the Vedas, the Srimad Bhagavatam. Given us the essence of devotional instructions by giving us the literature of the Goswamis. Narottam Das Thakur says, you know, when will I understand, when will that day come when I understand the literature of the Goswamis? Because if I can understand the literature of the Goswamis, then I can understand the nature of the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. So we're fortunate because, you know, we're being spoon-fed, you know, like babies. We're spiritual babies and we're being spoon-fed by Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, you know, if we study Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Nectar of Devotion and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, then we can know everything that needs to be known about the process of devotional service. we can know everything that needs to know to make our lives perfect. Of course, the hard part, the catch in all of this is knowing it and doing it. Right? So that's the test. That's the test. What we were discussing the other week. You know, in order to come to the platform of spiritual realization, one then has to pass the test. The test is, the mercy of the guru is in his, what? Instructions. So that's the mercy of the guru. And we pray to the guru, please give me your mercy. Then the guru says, do this. And we say, well, we might not say it, but we think, oh no, do I have to do that? Please give me your mercy. I just gave you my mercy. Why won't you take it? Right? You know, we tend to blame the guru. Why aren't you giving me your mercy? Or we blame Krishna. Why aren't you giving me your mercy, Krishna? But are we ready to take the mercy? That's the... You know, Prabhupada gives the example of a person swimming in the ocean and he's thrown a lifeline. And the lifesaver says, grab onto the rope. He says, no, help me, help me. But he won't grab hold of the rope. So the instructions are like the lifeline or the rope. The essence of those instructions is in the Bhagavatam. We need to read it. But not only do we need to read it, we need to hold on to those instructions and then put them into practice. And therein lies the dilemma for us and the illustration or the confirmation of the nature of Kali Yuga. We are given a wonderful opportunity in that we've got the human form of life. Human form of life is like a boat that can carry us from the material, across the material ocean to the spiritual world. We've got the favourable breezes in the form of the instructions of the Vedas. Been given to us by Srila Prabhupada in the form of the instructions of the Goswamis, Krishna's instructions directly in the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. We have a good captain, right? The spiritual master or the spiritual masters, certainly one of them, should be the captain of the boat who tells us, here's how to set the sails. Here's how to steer the boat in the right direction. So we've got the favourable breezes, the instructions in the Vedas. We've got we should have the spiritual master who's like the captain of the ship. So it shouldn't be too difficult for us to cross over. Sounds like we're going to the disco. Saturday Night Fever. You can tell a person by their ringtone. the real self comes out. The disco goer. You can tell a really serious devotee, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So what's stopping us from going, the sages, it's mentioned in the demigods mentioned that actually the process of devotional service. Basically, it shrinks the material ocean into the amount of water that's contained in the footprint of a calf. Right? This is the description. And even though the previous acharyas have gone to the spiritual world, they've still left the process by which they got there behind. They didn't go to the spiritual world and leave us abandoned or stranded. And of course, the process is in their instructions. So we're very fortunate. We have the mercy of the previous acharyas. We have the mercy of the Vedas, if you like, because the Vedas are meant to, as I mentioned last week, jyoti, what is it, tamasi ma jyotir gama. The Vedas are meant to bring us out. The Vedas are actually designed to help us, to facilitate our material life and our spiritual life, but most importantly our spiritual life. But it is incumbent upon us to take advantage of the favourable breezes, to take advantage of the instructions that are given by the captain. And follow those instructions. Then by following the instructions, we'll very easily be transported to the spiritual realm. We can very easily cross over the ocean of material existence. That's what the sages of Namasharanya wanted for us. That's what the previous acharyas wanted for everybody. So therefore they're asking Sudha Goswami, please give us, you know, the essence. Please give us the essential information. And that's what we've got. We've got, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we've been given the essence, the essential. Very, very fortunate. We're unfortunate because we're not able to follow those instructions. That's our misfortune, our disqualification. That's what we should be working on. Trying to remove the inessential and concentrate on the essential. To that end, it's interesting, Srila Prabhupada, it's interesting, here Prabhupada says, you know, we can't follow the Varnashram system. But Prabhupada actually in other places encourages the Varnashram system. But on the basis of Krishna consciousness. Not that we try to implement the Varnashram system to establish Krishna consciousness. That won't work. But we establish the direct connecting process of devotional service, and then Prabhupada says, by that purification, by that regulation, gradually we'll be able to connect with our natural tendencies as given by guna and karma. That's how we determine what our vana and ashrama are, by our natural qualities and by our natural tendencies, which will then be positively engaged. So Prabhupada did encourage Varnashram, actually, based on qualification and based on Krishna consciousness. So he said, you know, become Krishna conscious, then you'll automatically understand your nature and your qualities, and then you'll naturally then want to follow the guidelines for your particular guna and karma, but in Krishna consciousness. So sometimes it appears contradictory. Prabhupada says, Varnashram, not possible. But then he says, yes, we should do it. So someone, hang on a second, what should we do? But Prabhupada emphasized Krishna consciousness first, the direct linking process of devotional service first. the direct process of connection, then through that purification, one will gradually, and just like we see, you know, will, Prabhupada says, the Vaishnavas are actually better than Brahmanas. Right? Because, you know, especially in India, the Brahmanas concentrate on what? Brahman. Not on Krishna. They don't come to the conclusion of the Vedas that the Supreme Brahman, the Parabrahman, is Krishna. The Brahmana understands the greatest, but only at the impersonal level, generally speaking. So that's why Prabhupada emphasized Krishna consciousness, because then you become the best of the Brahmanas. Even if, and because this is, you know, the real purpose of becoming a Brahmana is to become learned, to have learning and to have realization. Jnana vijnanam is a symptoms of a Brahmana, right? The interesting thing in Krishna consciousness, we can have the guna and the karma, we can have the qualities of a sudra, right? Kalo, sudra, sambhava, right? We can have the qualities of a sudra, but if we engage in the process of devotional service, we automatically are elevated to the platform of Brahmana. Why? Because we should know Krishna. We know Krishna. And if you look at our devotional practices, we follow Brahminical culture. We rise early in the morning. We clean ourselves, put on clean clothes, you know, do puja, study the Vedas, chant our, you know, perform our sacrifices, chant our japa, in other words. So the vidhi of the Vaishnavas is actually Brahminical. Actually, it's sudasattva. It is pure goodness. But then in the daytime, we then go about doing our sudra business. But most of us, we're working for some master. Right? Most of us are all working for some master. That means we're sudras. Huh? So-called master. They're also dogs. There's the big dog who gets served by the little dog. Huh? But because we take our work and we dedicate it to Krishna, right? The underlying principle of our work is not that, you know, okay, externally it may look like we're sudras or vaishyas or whatever, but actually we're not. Because yat karosi yat asnasi yat jahosi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi kuntaya mat kurospa apanam, is it something like that? We do our work based on our Krishna consciousness. This is how it should be. So we go out and work according to our guna and karma, but in the morning and in the evening, our activities are brahminical or devotional, and then we may work according to our guna and karma, but that's external, because we've concentrated on the internal. That's why we studied the Srimad Bhagavatam, why we study the literature of the Goswamis, why we study the Bhagavad Gita, because our work is not wholly and solely on the external platform, but it is very much on the internal development of Krishna consciousness. So that we're working on manmana bhava mad bhakto. We're working on thinking of Krishna, thinking of our work as service to Krishna, thinking of how to do things so that we please Krishna. That's the essence of all work, ultimately. So, why we study the Vedas, why we follow notionally a Varnashram system in Krishna consciousness, is so that ultimately we, and that's the purpose. The purpose of the Varnashram system is to know Krishna. The purpose of the Bhagavatam is to know Krishna. The purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to know Krishna. The purpose of following the instructions of the Guru is to know Krishna. Even, you know, the purpose of our work ultimately is to connect ourselves with Krishna. Alright, I think I should finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Mahatma Ji.
Thank you very much for a very nice class.
Hare Krishna.
We know so many instructions from Vedas and from spiritual master and from all the literature, Rupa Goswami and Isha. Now, in spite of all the instructions, why is it waxing and waning in our service? Sometimes we are very excited, waxing, and then sometimes we are so low. So why is fluctuation there so much?
We are tiny and we're conditioned, right? We're conditioned souls. Prabhupada gives the example of devotional service being like, or our karma being like the whirring of a fan, right? Being driven by the electricity, which is more or less the current of our past karmas causing reactions. When we take the process of devotional service, we unplug the current, but still the fan is spinning, right, as we're getting purified. So, you know, devotional service is described as being a cultivation which is practiced over lifetimes. Right? So, you know, maybe some of us are still on the slow track or the slower track. Certainly, we have the capacity, devotional service has the potency, and we have the capacity to become pure devotees, you know. But the direct process still has its gradual nature, if you like. But, might I add, that in comparison to the amount of time that we've spent in the material world, even if we perfect, we can perfect the process of devotional service in this lifetime, simply by following, right, the order of the guru and following the instructions. We can perfect it. But there's still the the apparent karmas. It's like a residue, right? Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur does mention in the 10th canto, in his commentaries in the 10th canto, that still within the heart of a devotee there's still a little bit of pride. There's a little bit of attachment. There's, you know, there's still that residue of I'm the enjoyer, right? And that has to be removed. And so that's removed by Krishna through a little bit of suffering. It's a token of what we actually deserve. And it's, and you know, and a devotee doesn't lose his faith as a result of that, those reactions, thinking, you know, I'm a devotee Krishna. Well, sometimes you might think, I'm a devotee, why me? You know? I didn't do anything wrong. But a sincere devotee thinks, you know, due to my past misdeeds and due to my lack of sincerity, I'm not, and Krishna is revealing to me my lack of sincerity and my attachment still in the form of these reactions for our purification. So whilst we've made a commitment to Krishna consciousness, we've taken our vows and we've determined to become a devotee, still so long as there remains some of these residual attachments, then we'll see this waxing and waning of our enthusiasm and our determination. And you know, the process of, and that's why Krishna says, Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mama nanyabhak sadhu eva samantavya samyaghi vyasatohi saha. He says that, you know, a devotee shouldn't be criticized for some apparent misdemeanors, right? We should see the overall determination of a devotee is to surrender to Krishna, even though there may be occasionally some loss in enthusiasm. Because we know that he's on the path of perfection and that Krishna will gradually purify. You know, there's that story that Prabhupada gives of the thief who went on pilgrimage, and at one night he woke up overcome with a desire to steal. So he went through all of the other pilgrims' bags and stole all their belongings, all their valuables. But then after he'd done that, he was stricken with guilt. I'm on pilgrimage. What a sinful thing to do, steal all of these saintly people's possessions. So then he tried to put them all back again, but he put them in the wrong place. He couldn't remember where he got them from. So when everybody woke up in the morning, they found their bags had been ransacked and things were in the wrong place, and it was a big commotion. But the thief said, he apologised to everybody and he said, I'm sorry, you know, I'm a thief by profession. But I'm on pilgrimage to purify myself, but, and so therefore I was overcome at the time. But everybody forgave him because he was a confessed thief. He was repentant, huh? So, you know, devotees like that, we're on a pilgrimage, but sometimes we get overcome by our past inclinations. So what do they say? Bad habits die hard. Good habits require a lot of effort to establish and to maintain. We have to get, so you know, process of devotional service has great potency, and we experience that. As you say, you know, some days it's like joy, Hari Bol, Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya, Ananda Koti Vaishnava, Brinda Ki Joy, devotional service, whatever it is, nectar. Huh? And then the next morning we wake up and we think, oh God, not this again. Like I said the other day, do I have to do this for the rest of my life? Why is it so hard? And you see, we see it sometimes, those of us who are managing the temple, you know, we have devotees, we ask them to do something and they explode on us. It was like they're a tinder keg. You just have to light a match and then they explode. But we don't fault them because we know they want to serve Krishna. Their inclination is to serve Krishna. Haridas Thakur mentions this in the Harinam Chintamani. We measure a devotee's attitude, or we measure their mood by the degree to which they endeavour to surrender to Krishna, not by the bits where they get wrong. How much they're surrendering to the chanting, how much they surrender to the hearing. And then we know, gradually we'll get purified. That's the process. So we should know that, you know, we're conditioned and we're tiny and sometimes we get overcome. But if we keep on taking shelter of Krishna, then gradually those imperfections will be removed. Huh? Yeah.
You were speaking that in Vedas, like we can read in the Bhagavatam, we can read this essence every single day, and we should do this, but also at the same time, we have to follow what we're reading.
Yes.
Instructions that we're going to
download,
so many.
Yeah. How do you work that out?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Even this is the measure. She said that we get so many instructions. Correct me if I'm wrong. We get so many instructions from the Bhagavatam. We get so many instructions from the other literature that we read. But and we should apply them in our lives. But there are so many instructions. How do we work out what to follow? Is that right? What to start with? Yes, where to start. That's why we have a guru. And that's why Srila Prabhupada has given us some very essential, basic guidelines to follow in, you know, one of the a book we're studying at Urban at Krishna Fest, which is starting, is the Upadeshamrita, the Nectar of Instruction. The Nectar of Instruction is a very good book just to read to learn the basics. Right? Bhagavad Gita. We should know the Bhagavad Gita. Even the Bhagavad Gita is a huge book when you think about it. I remember I used to visit my friend Kunti Bhoja. I used to go to his house and I used to see he had one of those book stands. This is before I became a devotee. He had one of those book stands, and on the book stand was the Bhagavad Gita, a big thick book. And I used to think, wow, that's really cool. But look at the size of the book. It's huge. That's our ABCs. Right? The Bhagavad Gita is just a basic book. But, you know, this is, again, the quality of Kali Yuga. We're so fallen. We see the Bhagavad Gita and we think, ooh, what a huge book. But actually, as we become, you know, as you study the Bhagavad Gita over a period of, say, a lifetime, the Bhagavad Gita becomes, you know, relishable, and you can assimilate it just by a regular... You know, when I first read the Bhagavad Gita, I couldn't understand very much of it. Many of Prabhupada's books, you know, Brahman, Bhagavan, Paramatma, Jyoti, Brahma Jyoti, all these words, and I was going, ooh. I couldn't understand it. It was okay when I was talking to the devotees and they explained it, but I couldn't. Because I didn't know. You know, it's like a good teacher teaches by connecting new information to old or to assimilated instructions that the student has already understood easily. So, you know, when there's a lot of complicated information and it's fed to the student in an unsystematic, in an unorganized or a disorganized way, then in communications terms, it's called a data dump. Right? If you just dump a whole bunch of data onto a person and don't give it any structure, don't give it any introduction, don't give it any order or sequence, then a person's just overwhelmed with information. But if you present it to them in a way that's ordered and structured, you give the simple things first, then you gradually build, then a person will understand it because they're able to, digest it. You know, if you want to eat a meal, you don't just immediately stuff everything into your mouth. You have to take it bit by bit, chew it, swallow it, digest it, then get the benefit. So, you know, books like The Nectar of Instruction give us very basic instructions, 11 verses, systematically presented. First half deals with Vaidhi Bhakti, little bit about Raganuga, then, you know, the topmost spiritual platform. So one sense very elevated but also very basic. So it gives us a good introduction. So we can receive basic instructions from the basic literature. So that's why we study the Bhagavad Gita. Study a book like the Nectar of Instruction. Study the Isipanishad because it gives us very basic information. So we get the foundation blocks, then we can move. Then you go to the Nectar of Devotion. That's also quite basic, but also starts off basic. Here's how to practice, but then it goes into all of the rasas and symptoms of ecstasy and da 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 da. So it starts off basic, but then goes into very, very elevated subject matter. So, you know, we have to study these things with our guru or gurus, siksha gurus, who can instruct it. This is why education is actually so important, and why structured, ordered study is so important. So, you know, in our Bhakti Riksha programs, that's what we do basically. It's a structured, ordered program to train people. Right? Bhakti Shastri means you go into the next level, then Bhakti Vaibhav, then after that, what is it? Bhakti Vedanta, Prabhupada wanted, then Bhakti Sarvabhauma. So, you know, how to work out what we should do, that means study systematically. Start off with the basics and then gradually build up so that one is able to assimilate the instructions. You know, and sometimes it may take time. You know, there are sections of the of Prabhupada's books that I've read for many, many years, and I still don't understand them thoroughly. Or, you know, some things I've read 20 years ago, and I got one particular understanding of it, and now, you know, 20 years later, I go back and I read the same thing, and I find I get another deeper understanding or a different angle, so then it becomes deeper. Not so, you know, what Prabhupada said, you know, just keep reading. If you don't understand, then just go back and reread it. And just keep, some things I've read, you know, 10 times. And then all of a sudden, actually, you know what happens? Interesting. Recently I was reading I started reading the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam because we're coming up with Janmashtami and it's a good time to read about Krishna's appearance. And I was reading the instructions by Vasudev to Kamsa. And there's some instructions where, you know, he says that, why are you worried about your death? He pulls out his sword and he's just going to chop off Devaki's head. Because he hears that her son will kill him. And so Vasudev has to do some fairly quick thinking and some fast talking to persuade Kamsa not to kill his sister. And so there's some instructions in that are very profound, deep analysis of the process of karma and reincarnation, of death and birth, and how we create our future through meditation. And there's an example of how Vasudeva gives this example of how the caterpillar doesn't lift up its hind leg, if you like, or because it doesn't. Does it? Do caterpillars have legs? Yeah. Sort of. They do. It doesn't leave behind its base without having its front legs firmly attached to the position it's going to go to. So similarly also, we don't leave our bodies until our future life is created for us. There's that instruction, which is something, you know, it's a perspective, an angle of looking at reincarnation and how we create our future births. Death is already certain for all of us. All of us are going to die. Death is born along with our birth, if you like. It's determined. But then, where do we go after death? That's what we should be worried about. This is what he's saying to Kamsa. You shouldn't be worried about death. Death is going to come. Or it's destined for everybody. What you should be worried about is what you do now, because that determines where you go after death. That's more important. And then he gives another instruction about how, you know, you sleep and you forget who you are. So death is like forgetting who you are and going to sleep. And then waking up again, but with the impressions of your past karma then influencing what you do in this, who you are and what you do in this lifetime. So I was reading these instructions, and just, it wasn't until about 10 days afterwards I was thinking about this concept of, and I was in the shower actually, having a shower, and then I realised, dying is like going to sleep. In that you forget, when we go to sleep, the instruction is, when we go to sleep at night, we forget who we are. Last night I was dreaming, I was with Indrajuna Maharaj in Poland. He's in Poland at the moment, so I dreamt that I was with Indrajuna Maharaj. So I forgot about the fact that I was lying in bed. But I was thinking I was in Poland with the devotees. I wish I was in Poland with the devotees. Summertime, Woodstock, lots of kirtan and festival. Anyway, I woke up and, of course, have a guess where I was? In bed. So it occurred to me when I was in the shower, yes, dying is like that. You go to sleep and you forget yourself. And then you wake up, you don't instantly remember who you are, because the nature of death and dying and birth is that then you have to grow up. Very painful. But then as you grow up, you realise who you are based on your past impressions. You know, by the time we get to 25, 26, 27, we're fully mature, and then we're aware of who we are. It's shocking. It's a shocking experience to realise, oh God, this is me. Again. Here I am again in the mature world. And I've woken up. Well, at least we kind of wake up to ourselves. We only really wake up to ourselves. And this is why, there's this concept of dvija, twice born. We only really wake up to ourselves and come to our senses when we meet the devotees and are taught, what our spiritual identity is. So, sometimes we study, we absorb information. I remember I used to worry because I'd be reading Prabhupada's books and then I couldn't remember what I read. What's the point of all of this? I'm so stupid. I read Prabhupada's books and then I forget it all. What's the good of that? And then one day I was preaching to somebody, then all of a sudden, all of the stuff that I read, it came out again. And I thought, oh, I didn't lose it. It's there. It's just, I may not have access to it now. So it's interesting, it's a process. The studying of Prabhupada's books, the receiving of instruction from the devotees, putting it into practice. It's a lifetime in one sense of activity. Like this, the first of the Lilamrita, the first of the books called A Lifetime in Preparation. So we're in the preparatory stage. And we're gradually building our Krishna consciousness. When we're young, we think, I want to be Krishna conscious now. I want to be a Paramahamsa now. Huh? But it may take some time. Because, we're developing Krishna consciousness in this lifetime. And we need to start, find out what are the basics, and then gradually start building and building and building. Then gradually, as we mature, then we'll become more and more adept at recognizing the instructions, at being able to apply them. Then eventually we'll get to the point where, we'll be able to also then instruct others. How's that sound? That's, when we're 24 or 5, we're young still. We think we're ancient when we get to 18. Oh, life is so hard. But actually, we're just babies still, in reality. when we get to 25, we think, oh, gee, I'm nearly over the top. But actually, we're not. We have another 20 or 30 years of maturing to go. And that can be painful because we don't want to be Krishna conscious now. Sukadeva Goswami was self-realized in the womb of his mother. Right? In fact, he wouldn't come out. Banaswami was, until he was 14, he didn't take birth. But then when he came out of his mother's womb, he'd already heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from his father. No, he'd been promised by Krishna that he wouldn't fall down, so he agreed to come out. But then he left home. He was already self-realized. There's very few of us who are going to come out of the womb self-realized. In that regard, we're still in the womb of our mother, still in ignorance, basically. All right, I think we should...